right. 7:33. Shalom, ברוכים הבאים. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Very, very, very exciting. It's our third class of Hilchot Shabbat. Rules, instructions of Shabbos. First class, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the meaning of Shabbos in general. Why do we have Shabbos? What does Shabbos mean to us as Jews? What are the halachot of Shabbat? How exactly do we separate, divide the halachot of Shabbat? Zachor, which are the active mitzvot, the mitzvot we need to actually practice on Shabbos, like Kiddush, for example, and where there is the other part, which is Shamor, which is the passive, what we're not allowed to do on Shabbos. For example, just rest. Don't do anything else. Don't do any job. Don't work. And then you can fulfill the mitzvah of Shamor. Last week was a very interesting class about Kiddush. Talked about Kiddush. We talked about women and Kiddush. We talked about when do we make Kiddush, how do we make Kiddush, and what do we make Kiddush. We said something not very nice about Kedem, the grape juice. That was last week. No Kedem tonight. And tonight we move forward with our timeline and we're going to get into challah, into the challahs. I'm not sure how you say challah in Yiddish in plural. In Hebrew they say chalot. I'm going to say chalot or chalos. I think that'll be the same thing. All right. I'll say challah or chalot, whatever. You just understand what I'm going to say in that class. Don't worry about that. I do want to say before we start that it's very interesting because the issue of chalot in general regarding Shabbos has kind of a tangent, I would say, it's a tangent field to the halachot of brachot in general, of blessings. Why do we say hamotzi on bread? On what do we say hamotzi? On what don't we say hamotzi? Why we have the Birkat HaMazon afterwards, the grace after the meal? What exactly are the halachot of brachot? We're going to dive a little bit also into Hilchot Brachot in this class tonight. Obviously, they say usual. Two things. First of all, don't take from this class any kind of psak halacha. All right? This is for learning. And again, I will say also, and I will add, if there is anything that is so clear from the sources, you don't need any rabbi to tell you what you need to do. You just have the sources in front of you. Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed us with Seichel, and we can all learn the sources and understand what we need to do. And the more complicated questions usually are addressed to rabbis. That's the first thing. Second of all, I apologize beforehand if we're not going to cover everything, if we're not going to cover the entire thing of Brachot, for sure we're not going to cover tonight. But we'll try to do our best in terms of the scope of challah in that sense. Let's dive into it. It's going to be very interesting. Okay, first of all, source number one. I want to explain a little bit why do we have challot on Shabbos. It's a very nice halacha. Those of you who prepare challot at home, Torontonians are very much known, very well known for their very, very good challot, at least to those who hosted us and we tasted. And if you want us to taste your challot, you can host us as well. No hint, no nothing. No, I'm kidding. If Priel was here, she would really be angry right now. So it's one of the really nice mitzvot. It's a mitzvah. We need to understand. We'll talk about it at the end of the class. But it's a mitzvah. Challah on Shabbos is a mitzvah. Preparing challah or buying challah. There's sources over here, Rachel. Or buying challah. Don't need necessarily to prepare challah. But having challah on Shabbos is a wonderful, wonderful mitzvah. Wonderful mitzvah. So, what is the source of that wonderful mitzvah? First of all, you can see the Torah says, hey Liz, there's sources over there, and can just share with David. Source number one, the Torah says in Shemot, on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread. We're talking about the manna. The manna. We know that the Jews, there's the sources over there, if you want to take a source. We know that the Kadosh Baruch Hu had him give Am Yisrael a miracle in the desert after the exodus from Egypt. They didn't have food, so the Kadosh Baruch Hu made the miracle that this manna, Haman, will fall down from the skies. We don't really know what this manna was, this kind of a loaf, or whatever the Parshanim, the commentators, are trying to explain what was exactly this manna. Anyhow, we do know, according to some Midrashim, that you would imagine the taste that you want in your mind, in your mouth. You would take a bite, and that would be the taste of what you're eating, which is amazing to think about. Yeah, you want something flaky, you're just gonna think about the steaks that you wanna have right now. You're gonna take a bite, you're gonna have the steak. I don't know, South Africa, know that there is a, how do you call that? The jerky that is very, very good. Yeah, thank you. I don't know how to pronounce it. How do you say? Bouton. Bouton. Bouton.
Bouton.
Bouton.
B-I-L-T-O-N-G.
Biltong. Yeah, but it's South African. Bull, not B. Bull. Biltong. I would just say, if we had man right now, you could just imagine the taste of it. You don't need to fly to South Africa to bring with you in containers in your suitcases. Just think about it. Just take a bite. You're going to have it. That was one of the miracles. There's different miracles in the manna. One of the miracles that the Torah says, not brought in a midrash, but the Torah says, was the fact that on Friday, on Yom Shishi, they would get twice the amount, so they would not need to wake up early on Shabbos, go out and collect the manna. The manna was what they ate. That was their meal during the day. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, because on Shabbos you need to rest, you're not going to go out and collect the manna. You can just stay at home. You're going to have already stored in your house the manna for Shabbos. And we know that usually if they're not going to eat the manna until the end of the day, it's going to disappear. They can't store the manna in their houses. So that was one of the miracles. Akash Baruch Hu said, go out, collect two. One of them will stay for you to the next day. And this is what the Torah said in source number one. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread. Bread would be, in that sense, the manna. Two omers of each. And when all the chieftains of the community came and told Moses, continues on and on and on. The Gemara in source number two, in Masechet Brachot, understands from that the following. Rabbi Abba said, and on Shabbos, one is obligated to break bread on the meal over two loaves. Lechem Mishneh. That's the name of the mitzvah. Name after the man. Break bread of the meal on two loaves. What is the reason? Because the Torah says twice as much bread. Lechem Mishneh. Mishneh from the word sheni. Secondary. Second. You need twice the amount of bread. It's written, to commemorate this, Shabbat meals are based on two loaves of bread. First of all, this is a fundamental reason why we have challah on Shabbat. Now, it doesn't necessarily need to be challah. It can be rolls, it can be regular bread, and it can be everything you can think of. That's fine. You know, with tradition, specifically in the Ashkenazi world, and then spread it out a little bit more, is to have what we have today as a challah, which is known all around the world as a Jewish kind of bread because of Shabbos. But it doesn't necessarily need to be challah. You can think of different. In Yemen, for example, some of them are doing on the kubane. Kubane is a special kind of dish made with a lot of oil. It's like a challah, but not like a challah. It's rounded. They have a special pot for that. It's very good. Very much recommended if you know some Yemen that can make you some. Very, very good. But this is the reason for the challah. Now, there is another reason that is not, I would say, spiritual reason, more in a halachic reason, why we eat challah on Shabbos. And this is not only on Shabbos, but this is in general. That's a law in Hilchot Brachot, in the Halachot, the instructions of Brachot. And you can see in source number two. It's called, in the halachic term, it's called Dvarim Habaim Mechamat HaSeuda. Dishes, food, that is being brought to the table as part of the meal that is eaten bread in that meal. What do I mean? Look at the Gemara in Brachot 41, in source number three, supposed to be, not two. Rav Papa said that the halacha is food items that come due to the meal, Shabbaim Mechamat HaSeuda, come due to the meal, which are eaten together with the bread as part of the meal, during the meal, neither require a blessing before eating them, nor after eating them, as they are considered secondary to the bread. We need to understand that Hamotzi is the top number one bracha that we have on food. All right, we have different levels of brachot. The Gemara in Brachot talks about it all the time. Initials to remember it called Maga-ish. That's the initials. Maga, Mem, would be Emotzi, and then Mezonot. Gimel would be Geffen. All right, Bor Priya Geffen. Ein, Maga. Ein would be Etz. Bor Priya Etz. We have Esh, Aleph. Aleph would be Adama. And the last one would be Shin, which is Shehakol. All right, those are the levels that we have in Brachot. When a motzi is number one, we have a rule that if you bless the motzi, you say the bracha, we say the motzi on a challah, and there is more food in that meal, you're dismissed for saying any other bracha on any food that's going to bring up to the table. That's why when we eat bread, we're going to have more dishes. We're not going to say now mezonot. We're not going to say now borei priya et. We're not going to say now adama if we have potatoes. We're not going to say shehakol if we drink. We just have hamotzi on that on the bread, and we're not going to say on anything, and we'll talk about there's some exemptions, we're not going to say on anything during the meal, a bracha before, and a bracha after. We're going to say just birkat hamazon, the grace after the meal, that's enough. We don't need any other bracha, because that's going to be dismissing the entire meal we just had. We know there's different brachot also at the after, we eat. The bracha on water is not the same as the bracha on an apple. Afterwards also. All right? There's different brachot on that. That's why I said it's a little bit close to Hilchot Brachot, but we're not going to dive more than that. What is the exemption? There's some exemptions. First of all, the most famous one would be desserts. And this is something that not everybody knows, and now I'm glad that we can learn it. Desserts, according to most poskim, and I'm opening another bracket, and I think desserts that are not ice cream, because ice cream has a specific ruling for itself, and I'll explain why. But desserts that are not ice cream, according to most of the poskim, need to be said a bracha before them. Now, what's the reason? Because dessert, as part of the meal, is not liable to this ruling of food that comes due to the meal and bread. Because it's not for us. The food of the dessert is not for us to become full. It's not for part of the seuda for us to really become full from the food. It's more for a good taste after the meal, to finish it, to close with a good taste in your mouth. It's not so you don't wait. You're not putting, I don't know, we all say you need to leave room for dessert. But we all know we don't really leave room for dessert. And the moment you have the grapes on the table, you're not saying, oh good, I'm so hungry, now I'm going to eat the grapes and I'm going to be full. Usually we're full and we want the grapes or the cake or whatever that's going to be at the end of the meal in order for us to have a good taste in our mouth. That's why according to most of the poskim, all of us, when we have dessert, we need to recite the brachos on that dessert when we do so. All right? Now there is a question. If you have cake and you have fruits, do you say the bracha for both of them? Can you say the bracha only for the cake and in your intention have a kavana to be potter to dismiss also the bracha on the fruit because there's different brachot? Not to get into that. The answer is yes, but we're not going to get into that now. Just put in your mind that dessert needs to have a separate bracha on it, all right, before you eat it. Even though you wash your hands, even though you say ramotzi, even though you're going to say the birkat hamazon afterwards, still needed to be said a bracha before it. Another example would be alcohol. What?
That's an after
bracha. A birkat hamazon would be dismissing it. Yeah, regular birkat hamazon. Yeah, Maggie. Better because at that time around the table, usually everyone are talking and you're not like sitting together like in the beginning of the meal, everyone are quiet. Better for each one to say a bracha for itself. It's fine if someone's going to take a bite from a, going to say mezonot on a cake and everyone will listen to him and going to be yotzei dechola from that bracha. It's good not to because the poskim are not sure regarding fruits, for example. If someone can say a bracha on a borei priet on an apple and you can take a bite from your apple. Not necessarily sure. Most of the poskim say it's fine, yet it's better for everyone to just say their own bracha when they're going to take a bite. Also because not everyone are eating at the same time, not like a challah. Challah, you say the bracha, you're going to cut it, we're going to see. You're sharing with everyone a piece of bread, they're going to eat it. Dessert, everyone takes when their own time want to eat, they don't want to eat, depend on themselves. Alcohol as well. If you had a borei priet gafen at the beginning, you're going to be potter all the mashkaot, all the beverages during the meal for the same reason. Now a question happens when now your host, for example, you're being hosted at someone, I don't know, I came to the Louis-Ed and there is a wonderful scotch that they're now taking out of the shelf. And I was like, oh, I didn't know there's going to be scotch now around in the table. What am I going to do? Should I say bracha or not? So yes, if the alcohol, the beverage that you just turned out to put on the table was brought not as part of, you know, in order for you to drink during the meal, like sometimes people drink wine or coke or whatever. It was just for you for good taste. Oh, you want to make a l'chaim on scotch? You need to say shehakol on that scotch. Even though you say borei priet gafen, even though you say hamotzi, you need to say shehakol on that scotch and whatever that is. All right? Unless they're giving you good wine. You've already said the borei priet gafen, so there is no problem on that. But if they give you something like scotch that needs to be said before it recited shehakol, you need to say shehakol before it, and you don't need to say any bracha afterwards. It's going to be, again, yotzei dechova or dismiss, whatever you want to call it, on Birkat Hamazon. Any questions so far? If you're not, no, even if you're expecting it. Because that's not, you expect dessert usually, and you're still going to say the bracha before. That's because it's not brought mechamat ha-seuda. It's not brought due to the meal. It's not a part of the meal for you. Sometimes it is. If it is, if, I don't know, someone wants to drink scotch with his food that doesn't drink anything else, that's what makes him, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, no problem. But usually that's not the case. Usually the case is for you. Oh, you want to have a l'chaim, you want to taste a little bit, then you're going to say the bracha on that. All right, it's important for that. A question would be on Shabbos morning. Shabbos morning, sometimes people have scotch for their Kiddush. For example, they don't have wine. So in that sense, if Sitchi HaKod, Sitchi HaKod, there's no problem. Like here, sometimes people say that. In that case.
Did you say sometimes?
Sometimes. Yeah, scotch and the South African turkey that I forgot his name. Unfortunately, I'm sorry. But I also had it once and it was amazing. I had it once and it was amazing. I have to say that. This is regarding why do we have Chalat and Shabbos. So first of all, again, there is a spiritual reason. This is because of the manna. Second of all, this is because for us to not say any other bracha around the table because it's the main part of our seuda. The challah is the first dish. First dish is the challah of the seuda. This is the beginning of the seuda. Now, why do we cover the challah? This is in source number 3, which is supposed to be 4 anyhow, but it's called 3 on the sources. I'm not going to read it inside. But there are 3 reasons why we cover the challah. 3 reasons for that. First reason is that back in times of the Mishnah time and the Talmud time, they would not sit around one table like we are sitting today. The Tur is saying, Rabbi Yaakov ben Arosh, he's saying in his halachic book that once back then, what they would do, each of them would have their own separate table, and you needed a way for everyone to know the meal is starting together, that you know you're going to bring something for the sake of the meal. So what they said back then, cover the bread, or even put it in your kitchen. Don't have the bread on the table when you say Kiddush on the wine. Then bring the bread, and you'll know the bread is for the meal for everyone to eat, and then you can start your meal. You can start eating. That was back then. So for that, because sometimes they put it out of in the kitchen, sometimes they had it on the table, they used to cover it. So you will know this is now Shabbos meal. Now we're starting to eat. First reason why we do it. Second reason why we do it, which is the most famous reason, is because we have wine on the table. And again, as I said earlier, according to the levels of the prioritizing, the brachot, mem, hamotzi, comes before gimel, gefen. First of all, if I have bread and I have wine, and I'm asking myself, what should I recite the bracha before? I need to recite first of all the bracha on the bread, and then on the wine, because hamotzi is the number one bracha that we have in Judaism, all right? But there's a problem. The problem is, we first of all need to have kiddush. And that means we need to change the order. And we need, first of all, to say Bore Priya Gafen and Kiddush on the wine. And only then to say the bracha on the chalot of Hamotzi. Because of that, we say we cover the challah like saying it is not in front of us. Or like saying not to embarrass the challah that we're not citing the bracha on them. We say the bracha of Bore Priya Gafen on the wine. Then we take out the covering of the bread, and now we can say Hamotzi. All right? According to this answer, there's 3 different answers I told you why we covered. According to that answer, some say you also need to cover mezonos. For example, here we don't do it because we do Kiddush inside. But there are some shuls that make Kiddush in their social hall where they're going to have Kiddush. And then people are already having their plates ready with whatever they had, and they're waiting for someone to say Kiddush. That's a problem. Some poskim say you need to cover this mezonot, if you have, for example, a kegel or whatever, you have on your plate, or I don't know what, something that is mezonot. You need to cover that plate because mezonot, again, that's mem. That's before gefen. So it's not only covering challah, it's also covering everything that you, mezonot, in that sense as well. So if you have mezonot around the table, and you're saying kiddush, and you have food that is mezonot on the table right now, you need to cover it as well, according to most of the poskim. Now, there's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story that I really, really like. Rabbi Israel Misalant says that once he was hosted in one of the one of his friends in his village in Europe, and he saw, when he came to the house after davening, he came with his friend, with the balabait, and he saw that the husband saw that the wife didn't cover up the chalot. And there was chalot open, and there was a wine on the table. And the husband, Rabbi Sam Misalant, says, the husband got very, very furious. He was very angry on his wife. How come you didn't cover the chalot? You don't know that's a mitzvah, that's a problem. So not embarrass the chalot. And she was very insulted. So Rabbi Sam Misalant asked him, do you know why we covered the challah at all at first place? I mean, you're yelling at your wife. And he said, yeah, for sure, not to embarrass the challah. So Rabbi Sharon Misalan told him, I didn't know challah has feelings, but I know your wife has. So in that sense, think about it. I think it's a very, very interesting story and very nice teaching. The tour, and afterwards it's brought in the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it. But the tour mentions a third reason based on a Midrash. that again, because the Chalot are a commemoration to the man in the desert, to the manna, just like the manna would have underneath it this kind of drop of water or whatever they're going to be beneath it to cover it, and one above. For us, it's a custom to put map on the table, a tablecloth, or to have a special plate for the chalas. That's going to be for the drop that is under the man. And we're going to have one cover above the chala, which is going to be same like we had in the man. This is the three answers why we cover the chala on Shabbos. Now, there's different nafkaminot, we say it in the yeshiva. There's different, I would say, consequences or halacha lemaise, practical questions, practical halacha derived from each answer. For example, we said last week, if someone forgets to buy wine, he doesn't have wine, on Erev Shabbos, he's going to say Kiddush on the chala. According to the second answer, that the challah would be embarrassed, you don't need to cover the challah because there's no wine in that sense, right? You don't need to cover the challah, say kiddush. No covering is needed. Another example would be Suda Shlishit. Suda Shlishit, we need to have bread also. We need to say hamotzi. According to some of the poskim, it can also be in mizonos. According to some Ashkenazi, it can also be on shehakol or something else. But most of the poskim said it's better to have hamotzi on Suda Shlishit. And if you don't have wine, because we're not making kiddush, you don't need to cover the challah. All right, that's one of the differences between the different answers. Why do we cover the challah? Question so far. Okay, I hope it was all clear. All right, Netila. How many of you, first of all, wash your hands and then make Kiddush? Terry? No. You're all making Kiddush first and then washing your hands. How many of you were once hosted in a family that first of all washed their hands and then made Kiddush? Happened to you? Only one? You've never experienced it before. It's very, very, it's very popular in Toronto. It's very, very popular in Toronto, in different families, specifically German Jews, Yekes. First of all, to wash your hand, say Anetilat Yadayim, say the bracha, go back to the table, say Kiddush. You need to be silent. We're going to see that. You're going to be silent. Say Kiddush. Sit, drink from the wine, and then you're going to cut the challah and going to give the pieces for everyone. What is the reason for that? Again, I'm not going to read it inside. It's in source number 4. There is a machloket between Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. You know what? Let's just have a glance, just to take a look. The Shulchan Aruch says, in source number 4, after he blesses over the cup, one washes his hands and says, Al Netilat Yadayim. This is what we did today. Kiddush, washing your hands, say Al Netilat Yadayim. But look what he says. If he washed his hands, prior to Kiddush, if he washed prior to Kiddush, he has revealed that bread is beloved to him, and he does not make Kiddush over the wine, rather over the bread, because there is a problem. If you know that one of the ma'achalim, one of the dishes here, is more favorable to you, you need to say the bracha on it, even though it's not going to be in the order of what we said of maga'esh. So if you go, first of all, wash your hands, and then you're going to see the challah, basically what you're saying is, I want challah now, I don't want the wine, so you're going to say the Kiddush on the challah, not on the wine. But he says, only b'diavad, if someone for some reason accidentally did that, then what he needs to do. Look what the Rama, Rabbi Moshe Ishul, is the Ashkenazi Posek, when he writes his commentary or his, I would say, disagreements on the Shulchan Aruch, which is Rabbi Yosef Karo, which is a Sephardic Posek, look what he says. The Rama says, there are those who say that initially one should wash his hands before Kiddush. Initially. Talking about German Jews, yeah? Initially, one should wash his hands before Kiddush and then make Kiddush over the wine. It's being brought in the Rosh, brought in the Mordechai, the Rashba, Gos Maimoniot, the Tur, different postkings that say that. And such is the simple custom in our lands. He's talking about Ashkenaz, Poland, German of today. All right, this is the custom in our lands. And it is not to be changed except on Pesach night, as explained in Siman 473. We're not going to talk why on Pesach it's different. But it's different because of the Haggadah. In other words, the Rama says, no, initially someone is doing it. Why is the reason someone first, according to the Rama, should wash his hands and only then recite the Kiddush? Look what the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, is saying on his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. He said, they say that since the Kiddush is not considered a separation and hefsek, and we'll see what hefsek means in a moment, but since it is not considered a separation between washing and hamotzi, it's not counted, the Kiddush is not, as it is part of the Seuda. We'll see in a minute what it means. Moreover, since when one doesn't have wine, he is washing before Kiddush and saying Kiddush on the challah, which is what we just said, it is better to do always that way, so he'll have only one constant practice. In other words, what the Mishnah Berurah says is, according to Rama's logic, because there might be an option one day that this fellow will forget to have wine. Or back then, wine was something very expensive, probably, and not every we're not sure that every Shabbos you're going to have wine, because sometimes you knew that's going to happen. You're going to say Kiddush on the Chalas. Then he said it's better for all the time to do so. Wash your hands, then say Kiddush, then eat from the bread. This is according to those. Today, most of the Jewish world is not following this tradition. Again, most of the Yekas, this is what they're doing. All right, and it's very, very, very famous in many Yekas families in Toronto. Also young families. That this is their tradition, and this is what they're doing. I specifically was hosted in 4 families that did that. All right, which is very. I think it's a survey that said it's very, very, very popular. What? Any question? Okay. Let's talk about Hefsek a little bit. Now, we all know you're going to wash your hands. You're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to talk. You go back to the table. Some kids are playing, I don't know, and making some signs to each other. And you forgot the salt. Then you need to get to tell someone, bring up the salt to the table. Classic Jews stuff, right? What is the origin, the roots of this thing? So in the Tosefta, it says it's following. Sorry, it's being brought in Psachim. Psachim Zayin, not in the Tosefta. The source is not right in the title. Rav Yudah said that Shmuel said, with regard to all mitzvot, one recites a blessing over them prior to their performance. It's called in Hebrew over le'asiyatan. That's another halacha of brachot. First of all, we say the bracha, then we do the mitzvah. You're doing everything. There is an exception. For example, there is a machloket, Ashkenazim and Sephardim, regarding candle lighting. Do you say the bracha and then you turn on the candle lighting or not? Ashkenazim, first of all, light up the candles, then they close their eyes, right? Why do they do that? So they're not going to see the candles light up before they say the bracha. That's why they close up their eyes when they light up the candles. Afterwards, you're going to say the bracha, because you first of all need to say bracha, then to light up the candles. All right? Sephardim, first of all, say bracha, then light up the candles so they don't cover their eyes. Same thing supposed to be with hamotzi. We go, we wash our hands, we need to perform the mitzvah, we need to eat the bread. It comes together. So we're not allowed to stop, to pause, to talk, to do anything that's going to send our mind somewhere else that we forgot we just washed our hands. That's the reason why we're not allowed to speak, to talk during those times. It's the same in any other mitzvah that you say a bracha, and then you perform the mitzvah. Same thing would be saying, you eat a cake, you say mezonot, you need to take a bite for the cake. You can't say mezonot, then ask your friend, hey, how are you doing? And then take the bite of the cake. It doesn't work like that. All right? Something that we need all to understand in that sense. That's the reason why we do so. The question would be then, what happens if we need really to ask someone to do something that is regarding the seuda? For example, we forgot to bring up salt to the table. That's a classic case, right? Forgot to bring up salt to the table. There's no salt. Do you need to sign to someone? Can you tell him, excuse me, can you bring me salt? Or can you just go and bring salt by yourself? You don't need all the time to sign someone to bring you salt. You can come. So yes. There is no problem. Why? We see, first of all, from the halacha we saw regarding washing your hands, then taking kiddush. If there is something that is related to the seuda, it's part of the meal, it's not called hefsek. It's not a separation between, it's not pausing between the bracha and the mitzvah. So, if you need salt, you don't need to sign to someone, you don't need to make different noises. There's no difference than saying a word or making noises. There's no difference. Halakhically, there's no difference. Just say, tell someone, or go by yourself, oh, I forgot salt, can you please bring me salt? There is no problem saying that whatsoever. Yeah. Exactly, so that's what we learn. We need to know that some things are forbidden and some things are allowed. That's the problem usually with hachmaras. Usually when we talk about whether someone should be more mekel in halacha or should be more machmir, we say, but if we're going to be mekel here, then no one will really understand, and it's going to be a slippery slope and everyone's going to talk when we do so. We just need to know what we're doing, and then we should not worry about saying that things are allowed or things are forbidden in that sense. So we know, you can say we need salt. Usually it's good to have the salt prepared on the table beforehand. Don't get into that problem. But if you don't have salt on the table, you need something for the table, you're waiting for someone, I don't know, no problem. You're waiting for someone to come and hear a moti. You went to the washrooms. You don't know where your daughter is. You ask your wife, where is her daughter? There's no problem. That's not a hefsek. Better not to speak if you can. Everyone can be at the table at the right time. There's no problem. Also, it's good to wait. If we're making only one person is making hamotzi for everyone. Not every family is making their own hamotzi. Wait a little bit, a couple of minutes, no problem. There's many guests, they're going to wash their hands, they're going to come back, there's no problem. All right? What you should not do, some say there's no problem. I specifically don't like it. Some people start a little bit, maybe humming some a song or something, just to, they don't like quiet. We need to learn how to be also fine when there's quiet in the room, no one is talking. It's like a study that said, that asked, I remember that in Israel, ask how many drivers, when they drive by themselves, turn on the radio. And how many people just can't be when there's no noise around them. That turns them probably, I don't know, for interception introspection or thinking about themselves, internalizing some stuff. I don't know. They're afraid of being quiet. Yeah, we can also embrace the quiet sometimes. And also when there is guests, it can be also very nice and good. This is regarding the hefzik between washing the hands and saying the bracha. I brought different... Yeah. Same thing.
So what's the connection, like the understanding you do the washing the hands in order to do the bread, but that's not the blessing prior to the performance, that's also the blessing prior to the
performance. Yes, that's an interesting, because there's it's all tied to each other. Mm-hmm. When you say Netilas Yadayim, you need to say Hamotzi. When you say Hamotzi, you need to eat bread. So you cannot make any pausing between those two. Mm-hmm. So eating the bread is supposed to be very close to washing your hands. You see what I'm saying? When you wash your hands, you need right away to say Hamotzi. When you say Hamotzi, you need right away to eat bread.
So it's like two blessings.
Exactly. There's two blessings. There's two brachot. There's two mitzvos.
That's another one. Because when you wash hands, you say the bracha after you wash. Like you wash your hands.
Exactly. That's another thing. That's why. That's why we first of all, we say the bracha when we dry our hands and not when we wash our hands. Because the ikur of the mitzvah would not be washing, but would be drying. There's a problem saying a bracha when our hands are wet. Because when we have water on our hands, it's called something that is machshir tuma. We're not allowed to say bracha when our hands are wet. We're not allowed to. Because water on our hands, according to the Mishnah, it can be tuma. If you have water and you touch something that is impure, you're becoming impure because your hands were wet. That's why we're not allowed to say a bracha when our hands are wet. So we wait, we dry our hands, and then we say Netilas Yadayim in that sense. Terry, yeah. A little bit louder. Sorry.
It might be simple. But if you make the bracha for the candles and then you light the candle, once you said the bracha, you brought in Shabbat. If you brought in Shabbat, now you're lighting candles.
Very good. Yeah, because it's part of the bracha. You light it. It's not when you say the bracha, but when you perform the mitzvah.
Okay.
It's not the bracha, it's the mitzvah. A bracha plus practice turns to be a mitzvah. And the mitzvah is what making you to be a Mekabel Shabbos.
Okay,
yeah, Rachel.
So either way it goes, you close.
Yeah, exactly. You need both of them in order to be a mitzvah. If you just light a candle, you didn't say a bracha, that's a problem. If you say a bracha, you didn't light candles, that's a problem. You need both of them. Yeah.
Two questions.
Please, start with the second one. Yeah.
Why are we not supposed to talk between the Netilat Yadayim and Hamotzi?
I just said that. I just explained it. We're not supposed to talk because it's called hefsek, pausing. And we're not allowed to pause between when we say a bracha and we perform the mitzvah. We need to, when we say the bracha, we need to rush and perform the mitzvah.
Okay.
And the first question?
Second question. Why is it called the challah? Is it an acronym?
Okay, there's different answers for that. I looked for that, actually, when I prepared this year. There's different answers for that. First of all, the Torah says challah. The word challah comes from the Torah. Torah calls a loaf challah for some reason. What's the reason? There's different answers. One of the reasons I saw, I think it's brought by Eliezer. I think it's Eliezer ben Yehuda who tried to explain that. I think it's Eliezer ben Yehuda. Maybe I'm wrong. I think it's Eliezer ben Yehuda, who said it's close to something called charara. Charara is a word in Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, brought in the Gemara also. Says that's a piece of loaf, charara. Charara and chala, in that sense, they're kind of close. Reish and lamed are letters that sometimes they're changing themselves in Arabic, in Aramaic, and in Hebrew. And in that sense, they're kind of the same. Maybe that's the original, but more than that, I have no idea to tell you. I don't know. Maybe there is a chassid that says maybe there is an acronym for that because they'd like to do so, but I don't know about that. Okay, this is about the hefsek. Again, I'm not reading inside. I brought in front of you all the sources that talk about it from source number 4 to source number 8. When we talk about what happens if everyone are waiting for guests and so on and on, there is no problem unless you know you're going to say, you're going to eat the challah right now. So, who is saying the bracha? Who is saying the bracha? There's many people around the table. Who is saying the bracha? First of all, in source number 9, the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. If more than one are reclining, back then they used to recline like we do in Seder. All right? Remember, we say in Manishtana, שבכל הלילות אנו אוכלים בין יושבים ובין מסובים. We sit and we recline. Because back then, they used also to recline. Specifically when you're going to be in a very important meal that has bread, everyone would have their own sofa, their own table in front of them, and they used to recline when they ate the challah. So back then what he said, if everyone are sitting around the table or in their own tables, and more than one are reclining, and that means they are gathering together into one meal. They're saying, if we are all reclining now, we are together eating one meal. That's also a nafkamina, a practical halakha regarding zimun. Who can make a zimun together? People, three men or three women that ate together. Need to say this benching after the meal. If I ate and someone ate in a different room and didn't know he ate, I cannot say zimun was in together. So we need to know we're eating together at one meal. So back then it would be when they would recline. So if more than one are reclining and eating together, one of them is reciting the bracha for all of them, says the Shulchan Aruch. But if they were all sitting without reclining, in other words, they're all eating very fast, they're not saying or demonstrating, they're going to eat with each other. Each one recites a bracha for himself. But look what he says. In our days, when we don't recline, I don't know if it's good or bad, I don't like reclining, but when we don't recline, we have chairs. We rather sit around one table that counts, one table around all of us counts that we are all eating together, sharing the meal, and therefore one is saying the bracha. Now the question would be, as usual, we asked it last week, well, about a woman. Can a woman say break on the challah, say hamotzi for the entire family? So those of you who've been last week, you know that it's the same thing. We said that a woman is she's obligated to all the mitzvot of Shabbos just like men. There is no separation, even though it's a mitzvah shehazman graman, even though that's a mitzvah that is a positive mitzvah that is dependent on a specific time, yet women are obligated to all the mitzvot of Shabbos, including challah, and we know there is an halachic ruling. If you are obligated to perform a mitzvah, you can be motzi yedei chova, another person that is obligated on the mitzvah. That's why women can also perform, can also say hamotzi for the entire family, just like they can say kiddush. And I know it's very popular in North America, in modern Orthodoxy in North America, that the man is making kiddush, the woman is making challahs. There is no halakhic differences. I mean, making challah or kiddush, it's the same thing. The woman can say kiddush, the man say challah. If you remember, last week, we said there might be a slight problem when there are guests coming in, and they're not used to such a tradition, and in that case, maybe it's better to give to the men, only to the husband, to make the kiddush and the challah in that sense. But again, because here, that's my only personal opinion, because it's very, very well known in modern Orthodox communities in North America, that the woman is the one who's making the challah, it's not so weird anymore in the sense, and that's why it's not so well. It existed in my family. I mean, not my parents, but Priel and I. That's what we do. You can see it in some circles. Not as broad. I mean, there's no modern Orthodox in Israel. It works differently. There's religious Zionism, which is not exactly the same. It's not so. But there are some families who do so. There are some families who do so. That's the thing for that. The Gemara in source number 10. I'm just going to skip to the end of it. Says that Baal Habayit is the one who needs to say the bracha. In other words, the host, the one who is the Baal Bayit should say it. And today, men and women are the hosts the same. Yeah, there's no problem. Both of them can say the bracha. There is another opinion that says, if you're the one who baked the challah, you should say the bracha as well. That's why many women also say the bracha. And sometimes if the man is the one who baked the challah, why would the woman say the bracha on it? He worked so hard, he deserves to say the bracha on the motzi. Why not? I also brought in source number 11 the Ba'eri Tev on Shulchan Aruch says that women are also obligated to break on two breads, just like what we said, obligated. If there is no man, women still need to make kiddush and have two bread on the table. All right, it's very important. Okay, how do you cut the challah? Now, there's probably very different traditions in the room. How do you do that? There's two challahs. Sometimes there's more. Anyone is doing more than two challahs on the table? No, everyone is doing. Okay, take one and you rip it out. But how? There is two challah. We take off the cover. What are you doing then? There's two challah. Are you press them?
One down.
Wait. Not everyone are doing so. You cut a little bit.
One, yeah.
Anyone doesn't cut a little bit before? You all make a small cut. Not everyone are doing so. We'll see all the inside. Everyone. Now you can see where the sources of your traditions are coming from. What, Terry? What did you say? You don't do it. Okay. Usually the average, I would say, if I'm looking at the center of a Jewish family household, how it's being done, there is they're taking off the cover, they're raising up the two of the challah, all right? Raising up, some would raise up like one above the other, some would raise up together, depends how you do so. Then you take one down, some make before they raise or after they raise, before the bracha, they make a small slice in the challah itself, like a sign on the challah, we'll see why. And then you need to take one of the challah, and that's the challah you need to cut. Now the question also would be, where do you cut? When? How do you say the bracha? Where do you cut? How do you cut into half and then you cut like that? Do you rip it like you do in Israel? No one is doing it here. In Israel, many families don't cut it with a knife. They just rip it. Livtzoa, we're butzim, we break on challah. We're not cutting challah. We need to understand that. Livtzoa challah, to break on a challah, you need to the challah is in that shape not for no reason. Yeah, you don't need to cut it like slices. It needs to be ripped, like one piece after another piece. That's many Sephardim families, that's how they do it. They don't even have a knife for the challah. They only have a knife maybe to make like a sign, but they don't cut it. They really like rip that off.
What do you mean make a sign with a knife?
I'll talk about it in a minute. There's some families who do so. Some families who make a sign. I'll explain why. So there's different traditions. So first of all, let's ask a question. On what challah are we actually benching? There's two challahs here. Some put one over the other. Then you need to put one down. Then what is the halacha? So there's actually an halacha. There is an halacha called, I brought it here in, first of all, in source number 12. First of all, source number 12, we know we need two challahs, but we need to cut only one. Why only one? It says in the Gemara, I'm going to read in Hebrew because it's faster. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi said, "Chazina le Rav Kahana. I saw Rav Kahana once. The nakat tarte. He took two loaves, uvatzachada, and he cut only one. Why? Amar. I asked him, why are you doing so? Amar laktu k'tiv. It says in the Torah, laktu, collect two, but it doesn't say you need to cut two. So we need to collect two breads, but you can cut only one. Some rabbis, the Shulchan Aruch says that it's a halacha. Some rabbis, like Zagra, for example, said it's not good. It doesn't catch it as a halacha. You need to cut both breads. So there are some families who follow Zagra who cut both breads. Sometimes if someone wants to really be Yotze Dechova, all the shitot, then all the different approaches and opinions, then they're going to make small challahs, and then for sure they're going to and finish one challah, they're going to cut the other challah. They cut both challahs in that sense. That's how they do in my in-laws, for example. This is why we do two and we cut only one. Now, on which one do we cut it, and which one are we breaking the bread? So in source number 13, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Botze al shtei kikarot shlemot." First of all, the bread needs to be complete, whole. It can't have any tearing or cut already. That's a problem. Two whole bread. All right, we'll talk about challah from the freezer also in a moment, if you're going to have time for that. Two whole complete bread loaves. She'ochez shtehen beyado. He needs to catch both of them. Uvotzea, he says, and he says, hatachtona, the bottom one. He says the bottom one. What's the reason? All the nosei killing the parshanim. Why the bottom one? It doesn't make sense halachically. Why? How do we know so? How do we know it doesn't make sense halachically? Because we have something, and you can see it in source number 15. The Gemara in Yoma tells us there is a rule called ma'avirin ala mitzvot. Ma'avirin ala mitzvot means to perform. We're not allowed. I'm reading in the last sentence of source number 15. One may not forgo performance of any of the mitzvot in order to perform another mitzvah. If you have something in front of you, you're not allowed to move it away and take another one, but you need to perform the mitzvah on the object that is closer to you. So how come the Shulchan Aruch says you take the bottom one if the upper one is the one that is close to you? How can he say that? That's a problem. You can see in Psalm 16. Yeah, Rachel?
I see people hold the challah, the two challahs like
that. That's another answer. Why that's a problem. So people, the families that make both like that, what they're doing, they're not doing one above the other, so they're not going to have the problem which one is closer to them. That's the reason why some do it together. But still, there's some traditions to put one over the other. So, and then, which one do you take? The bottom of the upper one. Zabach, Rabbi Yoel Sirki said in source number 16, I don't understand, how can one cut the bottom challah? As the Talmud says, Ein ma'avirin ala mitzvot. No one, you're not allowed to move one object in order to perform the mitzvah on another object. Therefore, it seems that one should follow the Torah scholars that say to recite the bracha on the upper challah, not on the bottom one, and we are not concerned to Kabbalah reasons. And now he says that the real reason that the Shulchan Aruch, Maran Rabbi Yosef Karo, was a huge Kabbalist, the one who wrote Shulchan Aruch. He was a very huge scholar Kabbalist, wrote Kabbalist books, and the Kabbalah also has kind of influence on his psakim. on his Piskei Halacha. And this is a fascinating example to see where he brought Kabbalah stuff into his Psak Halacha. And he says, take the bottom, even though he knew, and believe me, he knew, there is a problem, halachic problem, in taking the bottom one and not the upper one. But because the Kabbalah says there is something in the bottom one, which is more for Shabbos, I don't really understand the reason. That's why he decided to do the bottom one. But here you see, there is Rabbi Yoel Sirkish, some years after the Shulchan Aruch. He says, we don't care about Kabbalah in Halacha. Halacha should be clean from Kabbalah in all sense. We need to follow the rules. The Gemara said, you're not allowed to move one object, the closer, in order to make perform the mitzvah on the other one. That's why you need to break on the first, the upper challah, not the bottom one. There's different traditions. What someone does. Some put it together, some take the first one, the upper one, some take the bottom one. This is the reason for that. Now, there is another problem. Why do some families cut a small piece of the challah or making like a sign on the challah? This brings us back to what we said. There is over le'asiyatan. There is a problem. For example, if you have just on a regular Sunday, you're going to Bobby's Bagel, you're getting your favorite breakfast bagel, and you're going to wash your hands, you want to eat it. You need, before you wash your hands, halakhically, because we said you're not allowed to pause between the washing the hand and the motzi, before you wash your hands, you need to take out the bagel from the cover, from the box that is inside. You need to unwrap it, make it ready on a plate for you to just come and have a bite, a motzi. And only then, when it's all ready, you can go and wash your hands. You're not allowed to wash your hands, go back, start to unwrap the sandwich that you have, and only then take the bite. You're not allowed to because you're waiting, you're postponing the mitzvah. You just said the bracha, you're postponing the mitzvah. Same thing, a problem rises with challah. Why there's a problem? Because you need, first of all, to cut the challah so it will be ready for eating. You're not taking a bite of the challah like it is. We originally, according to the halacha, we had to cut a piece from the challah, then go and wash our hands and say the bracha, so we can right away we can eat it. How come we're waiting? We say hamotzi, everyone are waiting. We start cutting the challah. There's a problem. There's also a problem because if there is many guests, you start cutting many pieces, and the one who cut the challah, sometimes he didn't even take the bite from the challah. So that's why, first of all, he cut for himself, he eats, then he continues in cutting for all the other guests. That's important. He needs to eat, so he will. You will fulfill the mitzvah, then continue in cutting for the entire group table. So, an halachic solution for this problem, according to some post scheme, and I brought it also inside, I just forgot where that is. Source number 20. The Mishnah Berurah said, the post scheme wrote, source number 20, that it's good to cut a small cutting before the bracha. Why? To reduce the time between the bracha and the actual cutting. And after the bracha, he will finish cutting that part and detach it from the loaf. All right, now you'll ask, so just cut before the bracha. Just have it cut already. But we said that's a problem, because the challah needs to be complete, needs to be whole. So we found this kind of a solution, a reason. Cut a little bit, that's going to be starting off your cut. You started to perform the mitzvah. You're going to say the bracha, and then continue and cut it, and you're going to share it with everyone else. That's why some of the families are cutting a small piece from the challah, or like doing a slight thing, before they eat from the challah in that sense, and then they continue in cutting. And where should we cut? Where should we make the sign? Or if you don't make the sign, where should you cut the challah? There's also halacha about that. Cutting the challah, the Shulchan Aruch says, in the place that is well-baked. The most well-baked piece or place on the challah is the place where you need to make the cutting. So for example, if your challah is a very big, tall challah, and has more narrow edges on both sides, the edges are more well-baked than in the middle of the challah. That's why you start cutting from the edge of the challah. If, I don't know what kind of bread you have, that the center is more well-baked than the side, I don't know, just think about it like whatever that is, the shape of the challah, you start from the middle. All right? Depends what bread you have, depends where it's more well-baked. In that sense, you start from where it's more well-baked. Also, the sign that you're doing is supposed to be from them. I brought also in source number 21 that there is a tradition to put both hands on the challah. There is 10 fingers. 10 fingers resembles what? Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. All right, 10 words. You put 10 fingers on the bracha. There is different 10 stuff. Shulchan Aruch brings it. It's a very cute Shulchan Aruch. In source number 21, there is different psukim. There is 10 mitzvot on the challah. There is washing. There is a motzi. There is mitzvot regarding the wheat itself. There is mitzvot regarding Eretz Yisrael, regarding the kohen, afresh challah, to the kohen, for example, different stuff like that. So there's 10 mitzvot. So that's I don't know, remembering the 10 mitzvot, you put your 10 fingers on the challah. There's more and more psukim that it brings here that I have, this verse number 21, that have 10 words in the pasuk itself. Salt. We have 7 more minutes. I might exceed in 1 or 2 minutes, so excuse me for that. Salt. What's the thing with the salt on the table? Why do we have salt?
Temple.
Okay, very good. What's the connection between challah and the temple?
Sacrifices.
Very good. Very good. Very good. So, with the Shulchan Aruch says, in source number 22, one should not break on the bread before he has salt or condiments to eat with the bread, not necessarily salt, according to Shulchan Aruch. Can be more. An example, when do we bring something that is not salt and we eat with the challah? Exactly. And we'll see that also. What's the source of that minhag? Salt or condiments to eat with the bread. If the bread is already spiced and have taste, he doesn't need to wait for salt. And now this is we'll see it towards the end. There is I think that's a Canadian invention. Never seen it before, for sure not in Israel. Having a challah with sugar on it.
Never seen it.
There is challah with, it's not sesame, and it's not poppy. It's like sugar, flour, whatever that is on the challah. I was afraid I'm the only one who knows what it means. On the challah itself. It's sticky and like yeah, you're doing soap, you're doing in Gorzinski, you're doing whatever you want.
There's
streusel. Streusel. Very sweet. I personally like it. It's very, very sweet. We'll see there is a problem for Sephardim to wash your hand and say amotzi on such a challah. We'll see in a minute. There's a problem for that. Sorry to all the Sephardim that maybe hosting Sephardim and giving them their challah. But such a challah, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you don't need salt. Because the reason, according to Shulchan Aruch, where he says here for salt, he doesn't mention not a korban, not the temple. What he basically says, you eat the challah and it would be for the mitzvah of the challah. You want taste. When you eat the bread, just put some salt on it. You can put whatever you want. If it's already spiced or have taste, you don't need to put anything on the challah. So that kind of challah that has the sugar on it, probably according to the Shulchan Aruch, which he would not wash his hands originally on such a challah anyhow. Maybe that's why he said so. But according to what the Shulchan Aruch says, you don't need to put salt on it. However, Mishnah Bura, that's what he explains. But you can see that the Shulchan Aruch in a different Siman, in source number 24, says that actually there is a sacrifice. He says in source number 24, in any case, it is a mitzvah to bring salt to the table before the bracha, since the table is like an altar and the food is like a sacrifice. And the Torah says that on all sacrifices we should put salt. Moreover, salt saves us from bad things. I don't know what salt saves us from. That's another Kabbalah stuff. However, he doesn't say you need to put the salt on the bread, but salt needs to be put on the table, not on the bread. But the Rama, I didn't bring the Rama here, he doesn't like it so much. He doesn't like it. He said, anyhow, you always need to bring salt, put the salt on the bread, and it all needs to be there because of the korban. You can't just rely on not putting the salt on it. Anyhow, if you don't have salt or whatever that is, just make the bracha, you're going to be fine, there's no problem. You don't need to wait for someone, for your neighbor to bring up salt to your house. Yeah. Okay, there's no halacha on that. No halacha. Some say on the challah, some put on the plate, and they put it on the sacrifice. They would put it on the sacrifice itself. They would be salting it in order to extract the blood and everything. But yeah, it doesn't really matter how you put it. No, doesn't really matter at all. This is good to have the salt on the table. Regarding Rosh Hashanah, we know there is a tradition to dip the challah or put some honey on the challah. Some do it only on Rosh Hashanah. Some do it from Rosh Hashanah throughout until the Simchat Torah, until Sukkot, until Hoshana Rabbah. Different traditions in that case. I brought it. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch talks about it. In source number 25, in Hilchot Rosh Hashanah, he said that at the evening meal, it is customary to prepare symbolic dishes for a good year. You dip a piece of challah of a motzi in honey. Look what he says. And after eating a kazayit of challah, you need to eat a kazayit of challah. This is the amount of challah you need to eat. No one really knows what is kazayit challah because it depends on the size of your challah. Yeah. All right? You cannot really measure it. It's a problem. Just eat a challah. All right? You should say, Yehi ratzon shetechadesh aleinu shana tova umetuka. May it be your will to renew us for a good and sweet year. But that's not what we're doing today. We dip the apple in the honey, and then we say the Shehi Ratzon. But the tradition, according to Shulchan Aruch, to the Kitur Shulchan Aruch, is to do, Rabbi Epstein, to do exactly this. You need to dip the challah in the honey, eat it, and on the challah in the honey, you say, Shana Tova Umetuka. None of the poskim like it. They brought in Piskei Tshuvot, that's a modern book of halacha, in source number 26. I'm not going to read it inside. They say you should put one side of the challah salt, the other side honey. Even if you don't do so, no problem. You can still put honey on the bread. Because according to Shulchan Aruch, you don't even need salt originally. You just need something to put some taste. But the Shulchan Aruch said, still have salt on the table. I will finish with the last source that we're doing here. Source number 27. I said that according to Sephardim, there is a problem saying hamotzi on a sweet challah. There is a problem saying hamotzi on a sweet challah. Sweet challah can be challah with raisins. Another typical North American thing that I don't understand. I'm sorry. I saw also challah with chocolate, some chocolate chips inside the challah. The challah with the streusel, challah with sugar on it, and so on. And another is sweet challah. All right, sweet challah. There, according to Sephardim, I brought it in source number 27, and I talked that some of you were in my shiur after Pesach on Sudas Kli Sheet. I talked about what is the bracha we say on a matzah after Pesach. Do we say hamotzi or mezonos? Because it's like a cracker. Matzah is a cracker. Why do we wash our hands on a matzah? It's supposed to be mezonos. So according to the Sephardim, it is mezonos. Sephardim say, if this is what is called pataba bekisnin. Pataba bekisnin means that's a bread that you don't eat for the sake of bread, but you eat it like a cracker or like a cake or whatever that is, then you are not washing your hands and saying hamotzi on it. And the definition of pataba bekisnin, according to the Shulchan Aruch, would be something that you can taste that has a dominant sweet, salty, or spicy kind of taste to it. So for example, a cake, you're not saying hamotzi on it. Now the question would be, what's the difference between a challah with raisins and a cake? So for Sephardim, there is no difference. Sephardim would say, both of them have sweet taste, therefore I'm not allowed to wash my hand and say hamotzi on such a challah. The Rama in source 27, into the Shulchan Aruch, disagrees totally. He says what makes, the Rama is Rabbi Moshe Ishim, the Ashkenazi post. Like he says, what makes a challah something you're not allowed to wash your hands and say hamotzi on is not the taste of it, but it's the amount of the quantity of the ingredient inside it. For example, if you put 3 cups of sugar in the challah, but it's not so sweet that it turns to be a cake, there's no problem. In that case, there's going to be a problem. But according to Shulchan Aruch, there's not going to be a problem. All right? Again, the Rama, the Ashkenazi say, it's not the taste, it's the amount, the quantity of the ingredient inside the recipe. You can think about jokes about Ashkenazi, why it's not the taste, it's the, maybe they didn't taste, I don't know. People say that Ashkenazi food is not so good like Sephardic food. But he said it's not the taste of the challah, it's the amount of thing inside. So that's why Ashkenazim, they have no problem washing their hands on sweet challahs, and sweet rolls, raisins, chocolate, put some sugar on it, put whatever you want on it, there's no problem with that. Sephardim need a plain challah that it can add salt, like the Shulchan Aruch said, so give some taste to it, because the original plain challah doesn't supposed to have a dominant taste to it, but rather needs to be just plain challah so you can eat. And we finish with source number 28. There is a mitzvah. We finish with maybe that was supposed to be the first source we should open the class with. We customarily need a quantity of dough that is sufficient to become obligated in the mitzvah of challah in the home. With this, we bake breads that we will then break on Shabbos and holidays. This is one of the many ways in which we honor Shabbos and holidays, and one must not deviate from this custom. Thank you very much. I'm here for questions. Oh, it says something about frozen challah. Thank you. I waited to see who's going to ask it. Yeah, frozen challah. You're going to like it. There's no problem. Frozen challah. Because we said you need to cut only one challah out of the two, but you need to have two challahs in front of you. If one of the challah is frozen, in other words, it's not cuttable, there's no problem. Because you can cut one of the challah. All right, the Rabbi Ovadia Yosef says in Chazon Ovadia, in his book, he says, because this bread, this challah in 1 hour, half an hour, 2 hours, it's going to be a regular challah, there's no problem putting it on the table. Another question would be, can you leave the challah on the table in its wrap? In the bag that you're putting it or not? That's another question. Some say you can do it. You didn't open the bag. You have two challahs, one is in the bag, one is out of the bag. No problem. But can you leave one of the challah in the bag that you bought it inside? Didn't open it. That's another problem. That's not good. Yeah, just open the challah and wrap it up afterwards. Okay. This is regarding frozen challah. No. I'm talking about a baked challah that you just in the freezer. Not the thing that you don't have in Israel. Not the frozen dough. That's not a challah. That's not baked. That's not a motzi. Dough is not a motzi. Dough is shehakol. You don't say hamotzi on dough.
But if you just say you bake the challah and then you put it in your freezer for like another time.
So no problem.
But then when you bring it out, that's considered a frozen challah.
Yes.
Yeah. Even when it's defrosted. You mean it's actually like a defrosted...
It's like a defrosted challah because you need to slice to break on one challah, but you need to have two challah on the table.
Okay, so you wouldn't cut the one.
Yeah, you wouldn't cut. Maybe in an hour or 2 hours you will. No problem. You can put it back in the freezer. Yeah, no problem. Just for the bracha, you should have two challahs. Put it back in the freezer afterwards, no problem. Yeah, why not? It's better to put it back in the freezer than cut it and no one will eat it and you're going to throw it to the garbage. Just put it back in the freezer, why not? Yeah, just take it out for the bracha and put it back in the freezer. Yeah.